Not that I'm saying you should have picked Free Guy. I'm just saying.
I should have.
Welcome to Wreckatopia, a happy home for recommended movies, TV shows, music, video games, foodstuffs, and more from two people you can definitely trust. Trustability varies by region, no guarantees implied. And now, here are your hosts, Chris Atkinson and Aaron Dicer.
I have come here to chew bubblegum and kick ass. And I'm all out of bubblegum.
Hello, everybody. It is episode 132 of Wreckatopia. My name is Chris Atkinson, joined by Aaron Dicer.
Oh, heidely ho, bubblegummerinos.
Ooh, bubblegummerinos. There you go. Mm-hmm. There you go. We had a bunch of people trying to guess.
Oh.
Arenos you were going to do. You had carpenterinos and you have liverinos.
Makes sense.
I had to think about the liverinos one because I was thinking liver, not live.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, once again, thank you, chat, for coming out here and watching us talk about movies on a Tuesday. We appreciate you coming out. I will start us off with some small recommends.
It's no big deal.
Itty bitty living space.
It's so small and light.
It's small, it's tiny, it's petite, it's wee.
And the first one is a movie that on our Slack has an official inside joke because someone, I can't remember who, first came up
Jeremy
recommended it.
Jeremy was the first.
No, I don't think it was Jeremy.
Really? It was somebody else?
I think it was somebody else, and then Jeremy came in. I could be wrong.
Okay, anyways.
Anyway, it doesn't matter because Jeremy did recommend this at one point, and then later on, Aaron came on as if unaware that Jeremy had also recommended it on our Slack. And then said, hey, you guys should watch this. And then it's become a joke. Hey, you should watch this. It's called Rebel Ridge. It's on Netflix. And a star-making performance for Aaron Pierre here. You will not be able to forget this guy after you see this. But it's kind of a Jack Reacher type of story. Ex-military guy goes to a town and then, of course, runs afoul of the cops, and then there's a whole mystery to solve and everything like that. In this one, the movie begins with him riding on a bike. He's got a bag, and he gets tapped by a cop car, and the cops then run him through the ringer. We read this as a typical racial stop, like one that's like the unforgiving and unlawful racial stop. Essentially, they take his money, they do this civil forfeiture thing that's legal to do, and this is actually something that actually happens in the real world, and so we take it as that, but it's much more layered than just that, as we find out as our character goes through and tries to get his money back. He's trying to get this money to bail out his cousin. I think it's his cousin. He's trying to bail out his cousin because his cousin is in jail and he's in danger in jail, and he wants to get him out of there before he gets hurt. But a series of things keeps happening where he keeps asking for the money back or asking for a deal or whatever from the local cops. Don Johnson once again comes in doing great work as the racist sheriff in the town. So it's a series of these things where he's trying to just keep getting in money, and the money he just can't seem to find a way to do it. He runs into an aspiring lawyer played by Anna Sophia Robb, and so they're sort of teaming together in this movie. But this is fantastic. This is one of those, like, it's kind of like a Jack Reacher type of thing, and it's really fun to watch. The action that's in it's really good. The story is really good. The mystery is compelling. I fully recommend this movie, as does everybody on the CinemaSins team, apparently.
Yeah, I think everybody on the CinemaSins team would really enjoy this movie and should get around to watching it.
They only gave it a chance.
If only. My favorite thing about Rebel Ridge is the main character's ability to be that take on all comers, you know, competence porn kind of character that's just good at everything, right? But mm-hmm. is also determined to, as much as possible, not kill people. And there is, I just, like, I know that's a, you know, has been, other characters have been like that too, but there's an intentionality with this character that I really found appealing of, like, even in the worst of circumstances, he's still trying to figure out how to subdue people as opposed, you know, to take them out. I thought that was really good. I also really like, you mentioned the way the movie deals in police politics and those kind of issues, and rightfully takes police to task for their treatment of racial minorities and all that kind of stuff. And also at the same time allows each police officer to feel authentically complete as a human being and not just a mustache twirly, you know, kind of villain. And I think that's really necessary to not take the humanity from, I'm going to say, one side or the other in those situations. I found it really compelling, really fun to watch. Maybe the best first 40 minutes of a movie I've seen this year. There's a little bit in the middle that slows down, which it needs to. It needs to kind of find its breath a little bit and then ramp up towards the end. But that first 40 minutes is just, 30 to 40 minutes is just mind-blowingly good. I really, really liked it. My first small recommend, I'm going to do a couple TV shows today, and I'm going to start with Slow Horses, which I think is Apple TV Plus, and I think is entering season 4. So there's a little bit of catch up on this if you haven't seen this. But it is maybe the, like, a missing piece in TV, it seems to me, of this kind of investigation procedural that doesn't feel like an NCIS, CSI, you know, one of the initial shows, right? It mm-hmm. feels like this a little grittier, a little more interesting. A lot of that has to do with Gary Oldman, who is just fantastic in this show with his character, the Jackson Lamb character. I think it's based on a series of books. I think they're called the Slough House books. And so each season is a different one of these books, so to speak, and kind of plays with those cases and what they're doing. But this is British intelligence in the UK. I mentioned Gary Oldman. Jack Loudon's in there as well. Kristen Scott Thomas plays a major role, too. It's just Jonathan Pryce is in there as well. So lots of great actors, lots of great content. This is well worth your time catching up on. The seasons are really short too, so it's not like you're looking at, you know, 15 episodes for each of the 4 seasons. So it's not too much of a catch up. And honestly, if you just wanted to start with this season, you know, they are independent enough that you could, you know, kind of find your way in. Character-wise, you get to know the characters more if you go in order. But yeah, no, it's really good stuff, and I highly recommend it.
Yeah, I've been seeing ads for this, and I want to see this at some point. But I also want to see everything else in the world that's been recommended.
Yes.
So eventually, I'll have some time. I don't know. I don't know when I'll have time. Uh-huh. Yep. You guys know when I'll have time? I don't know.
Nobody knows.
On to my second small recommend, which is Speak No Evil, which came out in theaters over the weekend. Starring James McAvoy, Mackenzie Davis, Scoot McNairy. Mackenzie Davis and Scoot McNairy are a couple that go out to the countryside. They meet, I'm trying to think if they're in Italy at first. They end up in the UK countryside at some point, but I think where are they? I can't remember which country they go to at first, but they meet this couple, James McAvoy and his wife. And they kind of strike up a friendship, and then so they're a little rough around the edges, but they're nice, and you know it feels like they're decent people or whatever. But the Mackenzie Davis and Scoot McNairy go back to the UK, and then they're invited by this couple out to the countryside into their home that they have out in, like, basically the middle of nowhere, And it's one of those movies where a couple, like, you know, they take their kid out there, and this other couple has a kid who has a problem speaking for some reason. He apparently had some sort of, birth defect or something like that, where he can't speak, but he's always trying to tell the other little girl something that's going on. And he can't, and he only can write in like Danish or something like that. So it's like, so he can't say anything in English to her. But meanwhile, these couples are like hanging out, and there's always these little things, like little things that are kind of irksome that this James McAvoy couple do, that you kind of like, okay, I can forgive that. Then they kind of cross the line. I would say more than kind of cross the line, and they're ready to get the hell out of there. But then sort of a little sob story gets them to stay, and then things kind of get even worse as it goes along. And, of course, we're trying to figure out, what is the deal with this couple? Why are they this way? Why do they want to have this couple here? What is the deal? I think if you've seen a movie before, you probably will know where this is kind of headed, but it's got some really, like, awesome revelations in it. But mainly you want to watch it because of James McAvoy and Mackenzie Davis, who are both fantastic in this. And I was happy to see that this was sort of a mid-level hit over the weekend as well. And it's getting pretty good reviews and well-received as well. And I saw this, not sight unseen, because I saw, of all the movies I saw over the summer, it seemed like this trailer was on it on every single thing that I watched. And I know you're a no-trailers guy, Aaron, but I go in and, you know, whatever. Trailers, fine. I've been lived with trailers all my life. I watched this knowing in the trailer what kind of goes on in this, but I wasn't expecting like anything to this level, and I really, really enjoyed it.
Nice. I haven't seen this or the original. Have you seen the original Speak
No
Evil?
I have not. The only one that I know who's seen it is Jonathan, so okay. I don't know.
So the original isn't like a classic horror that everybody's seen or something. So they're, you know, this isn't like redoing Psycho or something like that. That's interesting. Yeah, I will definitely check this out. I think James McAvoy is just great in everything that I see him in. So I'm sure I will check this out. And despite, you know, not usually being into horror that much, that's, you know.
I wouldn't say this is horror.
Okay.
I mean, it's got elements of it, sure. Obviously. Anytime someone is in peril, there's some sort of horror element to it. But I would consider this more along the lines of like, I don't know. This is off the wall, but hand that rocks the cradle or something like that, you know, where those type of movies.
Like a psychological thriller, kind of
yeah. A little bit. Yeah. I mean, definitely delves into the psychology of people who just want to be polite and and to their detriment, essentially.
Okay. So, I like that. That sounds interesting.
So there you go.
I'll have to check that out. The second TV show I'm giving a small recommend to today is a new show that just started called Futurama.
I've heard of that.
I have to bring this show up every once in a while because, and I know Simpsons is still on the air as well, right?
Mm-hmm.
Simpsons is still good. I still watch Simpsons as well. Futurama is great. Like, you know how like people long for the old days of when the Simpsons was firing on all cylinders? I feel like Futurama still is. I really enjoy these episodes. Hulu brought it back a couple seasons ago. It's one of those shows where it's hard to say what season it's in because it has had so many different types of revivals. There were like a segment of movies that came out one time that are considered episodes but not seasons, so I think it's either season 9 or season 12 depending on how you count, you know, those middle ones. But it continues to be great. I think a lot of this has to do the longevity and the quality of it with the voice actors who are doing these roles, just the best of the best, with John DiMaggio and Billy West and Maurice LaMarche, and it's one of those things where there is something that people who have practiced doing voices their whole life can do on an animated show that when you just cast celebrities, they just can't. And
very true.
And it just makes the show so good. And many of those voice actors are playing 5-6 different roles, like on The Simpsons. So, so yeah, I just every once in a while have to throw it out there. If I know it seems like a show from a while ago, but if you want to have a good time every week, pop in Futurama for 20 minutes. Like, it's just that fun. So, yeah, I threw that out there as a recommend.
I can't say that I've seen a lot of the modern day stuff, although I've seen some of the ones. And it's like been like two or three different comebacks where I've seen some episodes and everything. I'm like, oh, this is still good. And I just don't keep up with it. But Futurama has probably one of the all-time television episodes for me. And that's the Jurassic Bark episode where Fry tries to get his dog back from the past. And that episode is that's the reason why you watch TV and why you watch any entertainment whatsoever. It's one of the most heartbreaking things I've ever seen in my life. So Futurama is great. I have not seen anything new, but I can wholeheartedly recommend the series for sure.
Yep, it's good stuff.
All right, on to our big recommend, which is They Live from 1988, directed by John Carpenter.
I'm fine. It's just that you're so big.
It's so huge.
It's a good rule, but this is bigger than rules.
It's bigger on the inside.
Is it?
I noticed.
We begin by seeing our protagonist, Nada, who I do not believe is named in the movie. He is named in the book that this is based on. So that's what his name is, and I'm assuming that means because it's nada, it's nothing, he's a nobody. He's a drifter coming into L.A., sporting a backpack and a sleeping bag. After an unfruitful visit to an unemployment office, he walks out to hear a blind street preacher railing against the corruption of the human spirit, talking about a nebulous they that is taking over society's leaders. Not long after, Nada parks himself in an alley to sleep at night, and he sees a TV through a window where a woman is talking about how if she could just be rich and famous, everything would be okay. The next morning, Nada picks up a construction job. He meets Frank, played by Keith David, who invites him to stay at a place set up for homeless people that is close to a church. He is introduced to Gilbert, played by Peter Jason, who appears to more or less run the place. Over a hot meal, we find out that Frank has a wife and two kids in Detroit, and he hasn't seen them in 6 months. He also tells a story that ties into the movie's theme that when workers agreed to work for less money, steel company executives paid themselves raises. Frank has become wise to the fact that he who has the gold makes the rules. In the evening, we see a TV broadcast interrupted by a hacker signal broadcasting a man trying to tell the masses that humans have been put under a spell resembling sleep. That the number of poor is growing, human rights are being thrown out the window, and our own desire to be prosperous is aiding the attack on humanity, again by a sort of nebulous they who are safe as long as they're not discovered. During this broadcast, we are also introduced to a drifter played by George Buck Flower of Back to the Future fame, who played Red, the former mayor turned bum. He becomes somewhat of a key character. Nada notices Gilbert and the street preacher arguing about something as they go into the church. His curiosity is piqued, and the next morning, Nada decides to snoop. It's here the movie lets us in on the church's main function, which is the headquarters for the hacker signals. He notices some sort of lab, and in the next room there is a choir singing, but it appears to be a ruse as the music is coming out of speakers. Gilbert and two other men, including the one featured on the hacker broadcast, are arguing about what they need to do next, since their methods haven't made a dent in the status quo. While they argue, Nada literally stumbles upon a secret storage area just before the blind street preacher catches him, but after a customary face-touching and hand-touching, believes Nada to be an honest fellow. He wants Nada to join the revolution, but he's not ready for that yet. Meanwhile, we are alerted to helicopters circling the area. Gilbert puts on some sunglasses, but it might be a pretty sunny day after all. Nada then notices Gilbert unloading some boxes out of the church. Nada tells Frank what he's seeing, but Frank doesn't want to look any further because he's got a job to worry about. He doesn't bother anybody and nobody bothers him. He walks down a white line. Nada tells him that the white line is in the middle of the road and that's the worst place to drive. In other words, exactly what this movie is telling us. Staying out of it is what got us in this mess in the first place. Even though we don't quite know the nature of the mess in this movie yet. During the evening, a raid takes place on the church and the homeless shelter, complete with a so-called scientific investigation division. They demolish the shelter. The cops beat down the hacker signal guy and the street preacher. Nada helps someone evade the police by going into an abandoned building where they stay for the night. The next morning, Nada snoops the church again, breaking into the secret hiding place that he takes a box from. He sneaks away to an alley where it's revealed that the box is full of sunglasses. He can't figure out why they are important, but he takes a pair, throwing the box full of other sunglasses into the trash. As he walks into the city, he puts the sunglasses on. Stuff we see as advertisements are actually revealed to be subliminal messages to obey and to marry and reproduce. Everywhere he looks, there are messages that are meant to reinforce a docile human race. But the biggest reveal is that the sunglasses expose those who are in on the conspiracy. The aliens, we will call them, I suppose. At a newspaper stand, Nada sees a man who looks like his skin has been ripped off. Other people who aren't in on it look normal. Nada sees a political figure on TV, and whatever he's saying is translated into a calming message about trusting the process. And here is where it feels like something snaps, as Nada has no trouble telling an exposed woman she looks like her head fell in the cheese dip back in 1957. He's so brazen about what these sunglasses can do, he's got all of the they reporting him, using a radio on their watches in mere seconds after he snaps. "I don't like this one bit," he says, as he gets the hell out of that store. Nada gets confronted by some cops who are willing to negotiate, but he is not. He beats them up, takes their weapons, and kills them. Next up, the bank, brandishing a shotgun. When he sees the aliens inside, he tells them, "I have come here to chew bubblegum and kick ass, and I'm all out of bubblegum." And then movie history was made. He shoots a bunch of aliens. Then he sees that they have one more trick down their sleeve. They can use the watches to transport wherever they want to go. In a parking garage, he commandeers a woman's car. This character is Holly Thompson. By the way, this is what this movie is quite a bit after this. Everything is like lucking into situations or finding characters and whatever. It's kind of funny. But this character is Holly Thompson, played by Meg Foster. She appears normal through the glasses, so she seems trustworthy. Eventually, she drives him all the way to her house. He tries to tell her what's going on, but she doesn't seem to believe. When things settle down, he tries to get to know Holly, who tells him that she works at a TV station. When he starts explaining that signals coming from TV sets are part of the problem, Holly hits Nada over the head, and he crashes out of her third-story window and down a hill. And he survives this. Nada realizes he no longer has the magic glasses, and he's back to square one, living on the streets. But this time, he's a wanted fugitive. The next day, he tries to talk to Frank, who doesn't want any of Nada's heat. Nada figures if he can get Frank to wear the glasses, he can explain himself. So he goes back to the alley where he threw away the box, only to find out that the trash is getting collected. Luckily, the garbage collectors get into an argument so that Nada can rummage through their truck, and he finds the box full of sunglasses. Frank magically arrives to the alley to give Nada 1 week's pay to help him out. When Nada tries to get Frank to wear the glasses, Frank punches him, and so ensues a famous fight that spans 5.5 minutes. Every time you think it's over, it keeps going. Nada finally forces Frank to wear the glasses, and Frank finally sees. Brother, life's a bitch, and she's back in heat. Frank and Nada get a room to recover and to talk about what they're going to do. They decide they need to find the people who made the glasses if they're still alive. The next day, Gilbert luckily appears at their motel to tell them there's a meeting tonight with the revolution. At the meeting, people are being told to memorize the locations of safe houses, and they switch the glasses for contacts. One of the revolutionaries gives them the alien watch and told of its capabilities. Frank and Nada are told that the cops are looking for them, and most of these cops are human, being told that their group is a communist group trying to take down the government, and people are eagerly joining up with the aliens because they are given wealth and power. The hacker broadcast tells us that the aliens are ruining the environment to make it more like their own, and Gilbert tells Frank and Nada that the Earth is just another third world to exploit for resources before they move on to the next. When Gilbert addresses everyone, the focus is on the alien mind control signal. One of the people who works at a station called KRDA thinks the signal is coming from one place. And then a surprise Holly Thompson shows up to say that KRDA is not the location of the signal. Nada and Holly express knowing glances. Holly seems sorry for almost killing him and didn't know who he was or what he was trying to do. And when you go back to think about that, he should have mistrusted her immediately. I don't know why he trusts her at all after all that. They were alone in her house. Why did she do that? Not too long after that, the meeting gets raided. Frank and Nada escape the building, but then get trapped in an alley. Luckily, the watch they were given malfunctions and gives them a portal to escape through. They are transported to an underground facility. There's a scene. I love this scene in this thing. They go up, and there's a couple of guards hearing the news about the terrorists being defeated. And they do this little jumping high five thing that you see earlier in the movie in a basketball commercial. There's a commercial where there's a bunch of white guys playing basketball, and they do this odd high five thing that they do the exact same thing in this. These guards do the exact same thing later on. It's the exact high five. The underground tunnels lead them to a conference where the aliens are excited about how their full takeover will take place in the year 2025. Holy crap. That's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
They run into the former drifter from the homeless shelter who has sold out and is apparently oblivious to all those crimes Nada was in the news for, which the movie has apparently forgotten about as Nada walks amongst the aliens. Anyway, the former drifter shows Frank and Nada around, showing them an airport where the aliens can transport through space. He then shows them a television station where the signal is being sent all over the world. They are taken to the studio where Frank and Nada start shooting guards. The drifter tells them the signal is probably being broadcast from the roof, but implores them not to go further because giving in is so much easier. He disappears via watch before they can kill him. Then Frank and Nada attack the whole studio. Nada hopes to find Holly at the station so they can access the roof and destroy the signal. But if he's done any kind of thinking about Holly at this point, he wouldn't trust her. They do indeed run into Holly while shooting guards who only come in teams of two every 10 seconds. On the way up the stairs, Holly unceremoniously kills Frank off screen. Nada gets to the roof and sees the satellite responsible for ruining the world. Holly reveals her heel turn to Nada on the roof. In a showdown involving Holly and a couple of helicopters, Nada kills Holly and then takes aim at the satellites as the helicopter guys shoot at him. He flips off the guys in the helicopters. We now see the results of Nada's actions. All of the aliens are exposed without the aid of any eyewear. An alien Siskel and Ebert rail against George Romero and John Carpenter. Finally, we see a woman riding a guy in bed with her eyes closed. When she opens her eyes, she realizes she's been banging an alien. It's a tough way to learn that lesson. And the movie ends. Aaron, what did you think about They Live?
What's the matter, baby?
yep.
I don't know that this is a good movie. Like when you start to
take that back.
I think those distinctions are over discussed. Because at the end of the day, I do think it's best just to talk about your own personal experience with the film. And if you enjoyed watching it, if you want to watch it again, I think technically for you, that makes it a good movie. I don't, you know, making a distinction between, well, it's all the plot is so convenient and the acting isn't all that great in places. I don't know that matters all the time. For me personally, I enjoy watching parts of this movie. I think I'd like to start with Piper because I think he changes this film in foundational ways with his casting. And I think the movie is what it is because he is the lead in the movie. I was looking at something in the trivia about all the other people who were considered for this movie. And I can list some of those if you want, but in looking at each one, you go, oh my goodness, that is a completely different movie. Harrison Ford was mentioned. That is a completely different movie if Harrison Ford is playing Nada. Even somebody like Sylvester Stallone, it's still a completely different movie if Stallone is tapped for that role. The only ones I saw where I'm like, okay, maybe it kind of could be the same movie. Maybe like Jean-Claude Van Damme is kind of in that same tone, but not really.
I don't know if you get this wrestler mentality that, you know, Roddy Piper, I think, quit wrestling to do this movie. I think that's what the story is. He was told by Vince McMahon, don't do this. I'll get you some other movie that you can do or something like that. And he just I want to kind of do this movie. But yeah, the wrestler mentality and the sort of like the non-actory, I don't know. I mean, wrestlers are actors too, as we've seen time and time and again, but his performance turns this into true B movie schlock that you like. You were talking about, it's not just the acting styles that you're talking about,
right?
With Harrison Ford and Sylvester Stallone and Jean-Claude Van Damme.
Correct.
You're talking about their teams that come in and make the movie more about them and more about what they're about and everything. That's what changes a whole movie. We forget that sometimes, that no matter how big of a director you are, if you hire an actor, they're going to hire their own people to kind of like, okay, but this is fine, but this is not what I would do. So, you know, so anyway, go on.
Yeah. So it could steal a little bit of the movie's ability to be a ridiculous satire if some of those people come in. And that at the end of the day is what I think this movie is a ridiculous satire. It is absolutely saying something. And in fact, I don't, it's not one of those metaphorical movies or satirical movies where you walk away going, I wonder if it was saying this. No, it's very clear what it's saying. It printed out in block letters all over the movie.
Right.
But I do think Piper makes this movie what it is, and I'm not mad about it. I actually think in the first 20 minutes of this movie, he's actually a decent actor. Like when he's playing kind of the subtler guy walking into town, having conversations, not everybody can pull that off. And I think he actually does pull that off. Now, the character switch is almost dizzying.
It's crazy.
It's wild how quickly he turns into a professional wrestler from just normal guy walking in into the street. And, you know, within minutes of finding out they're aliens, he's blowing them away in a bank, like, you know, like with a shotgun. Like it is.
Yeah.
Like,
no, I don't need it. I don't need to know any more about this.
Nope.
I just need to go ahead and start killing people now. That's where the revolution starts.
So yeah, that turn is wild. I really do like the blatant in your faceness of the message here. The idea that when you look at a piece of money, it says, I am your God or whatever. This is your God or whatever. Like that is, you know, it's so blatant that it becomes more meaningful in some ways.
Well, and that's the thing, right? Like these are not messages that are meant to be seen. They are supposed to be that obvious, but you're only supposed to subliminally get it as a human being, and that's what we're going with here. Subliminal, like this message is coming into my head or whatever. But yeah, exactly. It's not subtle, but I think it is better for it. Because if these things that he was looking at turned into something subtle, then I'm like, well, then how are these getting into our head then if they're that subtle? So anyway.
Right. Yeah, totally. One of the lines I caught this time that I really like, they're talking about the aliens' motivations for what they're doing. And somebody says, we could be pets, we could be food, but all we really are is livestock. And I think that really sums up the idea of how power uses fear or whatever motivations it can find to turn people into the beasts of burden that they need to, you know, mold the world into the way that they see it should be or whatever. And I really liked that line. I couldn't have my, you know, little piece here without mentioning the fight. The 5-minute parking lot fight, which in the trivia that I read was apparently something that Piper and Keith David put together themselves, and was originally supposed to be just like a 30-second, you know, minute kind of scuffle. And Carpenter was so impressed with all the, you know, the work that they did that they just left the whole thing in.
Yeah.
It just it's one of those things where you're like, this is still going? And apparently was all real except for face and groin. Those were the only thing they told you they wouldn't actually hit each other's faces or groin, but any other body punch, body blow, that kind of stuff was apparently real. So it's just one of those things where the fight is over like two different times, and it's like they just decide to keep hitting each other. And there's something so, again, meaningful about this idea of waking somebody up to the truth. This idea of you are going to, I need you to wear these glasses. I need you to wake up with me and see the world the way I see it. And yeah, that's, you know, that's something we all deal with. And especially as, you know, the world continues to move towards more and more polarization, it's just like, you know, we all feel that, like, how do you not see the things that I see?
Exactly. And like, yeah, that, I mean, absolutely, like the forced nature of this, like the thing that Keith David has been saying this whole time is like, look, I think, by the way, they kind of, it feels like Keith David should be more into this than he is from the beginning of it, because he says he's tired of all this stuff. He's tired of it and everything, but then they've decided to make him the guy who walks the line, and he doesn't want to like ruffle any feathers or anything like that, which is weird after that steel company story he tells. It's so funny. Like you sit there and think, man, if only this person could see this, they would finally understand what's going on and everything. That's such an awesome thing that they went 5 minutes on this, because I think that's kind of how long it needed to go. It probably 30 seconds would not have done justice for what he's trying to do here, trying to make him see and everything. So I'm very appreciative that they thought of doing that anyway.
Yeah. That's pretty much it. I also think the ending of this movie is just so perfect for this movie. It's one of the wildest endings ever, you know, like it, back in the, what year was this movie? It was the 80s, wasn't it?
1988.
Yeah. 88. For those of you who lived through the 80s, it was almost an unwritten rule that there had to be breasts in your movie. Like, it was like on the checklist if you, you know, were putting out a rated R movie. But usually movies would do that towards the beginning, keep people, you know, titillated, interesting, whatever. Yeah. And this movie's like, nope, saving it for the end, baby.
Yep.
it's one of the more wild things I've ever seen, in choices of for the way a movie ends. But
yeah, it kind of makes you wonder what this might've, I mean, the movie, I guess, has to end there, but it would have been kind of interesting to see where they could have gone if this was the middle of the movie.
Right.
Like, you know, and see where they go from there at that point. See if they could still try to pull the wool over everybody's eyes even after they were exposed. I think that's where you start getting into some real, like, heavy shit at that point. Because, who cares they were exposed? Now I can live in wealth and glamour and everything because they're helping me. Who cares that they're aliens? You know, right. That would have been a thing, too.
Absolutely.
But, anyway, what is your super secret double feature?
So just like you, I like to save money, and that's why when Mint Mobile came over to our little corner of the internet, I started to pay attention. And let me tell you, something interesting happened. I realized that I think I have an unhealthy relationship with my existing provider. I had to do this thing where it's like, should I try something new? No, I've been with this provider for so long. And then I got to looking at my bill and I thought, do I really want to keep spending this much money when it appears that Mint Mobile can do the exact same for $15 a month? And that's when I started to click around and find out. To get started, I did just what you can do. Go to mintmobile.com/recotopia. And then right there is where I saw the 3 month plans that were like $15 a month. And that includes the unlimited plan. All of the plans come with high speed data and unlimited talk and text, and they deliver all that on the nation's largest 5G network, which is great. Even better, you can use your own phone number. And I'm kind of, you know, connected emotionally to my phone number. Another thing I probably should dig into in therapy. So to get this new customer offer and your new 3-month premium wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/recotopia. That's mintmobile.com/recotopia. You can cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/recotopia. There is a $45 upfront payment required that's equivalent to $15 a month. New customers on first 3-month plan only. Speeds slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan, and additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for details.
Be very, very quiet.
Secret? What secret?
Our dirty little secret.
I tell you something I've never told anyone.
They've been throwing some stuff out in the chat that I definitely thought about. I feel like the obvious choice is The Matrix. It really feels like, you know, thematically, there's a lot of the same things going on. Dark City is very much the same way. And those are good choices. And I just did not go with those choices. Instead of going thematically, although there are instead of going with thematically about like having your eyes closed to what's going on, like with the sunglasses, I went more with the themes of alien invasion that has to also do with societal, you know, rising up, and went with a movie called Attack the Block. And it feels very similar as far as like it's these kids, you know, young adults, whatever, that that kind of figure this thing out and have to kind of lead the way on fighting back the alien invaders. But yeah, if you haven't seen Attack the Block, I think it was John Boyega, by the way, is leading this. I think it was his first kind of real introduction to the film world. Jodie Whittaker is in there, and Nick Frost is in there. So there are some familiar faces that you will know. I really, really think this is worth a watch if you haven't seen it. It's a very interesting movie, and I think would fit very well with They Live. So yeah,
I think so too. And I'm actually surprised, unless I've missed it, someone hasn't brought up Free Guy, which is you know, another one that I feel like that had to have been inspired by They Live in so many ways, because of not that I'm saying you should have picked Free Guy, I'm just saying that, you know, I'm surprised I haven't seen anybody talk about that, but because yeah, Free Guy has a whole scene where like they're in the bank, it's a bank. And and he's like, wear these, learn the secrets behind our world. And he's like, no, I don't want to do it either. So like, I think it's Lil Ro Howery. Attack the Block is a good choice. I haven't seen this movie in forever, but I highly enjoyed it.
Nice.
So, okay. Let's see. What is our So what's our next movie? It's Aaron's turn. So what are we watching for our homework next week?
We're going back 15 years to a movie that blew me away, but I haven't seen since, and I want to revisit it and go over it with Recotopia. It is called Moon.
God, I love this movie.
I loved it too, but it has been 15 years since I've seen it, it deserves another watch from me. And I'm excited to get into Moon. So that'll be next week.
Yeah. Okay. Great. I love it. And of course, we got David Bowie's kid directing this.
Yeah,
one.
That's right.
And we talked to I can't remember the guy's name. We talked to a guy who did a movie when we were doing director interviews, who was friends with Moon director's name?
It is Duncan Jones.
Duncan Jones. I don't know why I can't think of that. It's an easy name to remember. But Duncan Jones, he was a friend. He was a childhood friend of Duncan Jones, and he used to see David Bowie around the house all the time, apparently. But he apparently also worked on this movie too, and it was interesting getting his perspective on that. So. I haven't seen this. I don't know if I've seen this since theaters, maybe. I own it, but I don't know if I've seen it since theaters. But yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing this again. So it'd be awesome.
And people say, like, you know, people always talk about, you know, movies like, you know, Back to the Future or, you know, Jurassic Park being so old and making you feel old. This makes me feel older to know that Moon is 15 years old. Like, whatever it is, like, no, Moon came out yesterday. Like, what are you saying? Mm-hmm. This is 15 years old. I don't understand the words that are coming out of your mouth. But yeah, it was 15 years ago.
Agreed. I'm the same way, because everything in the 2000s seems like it's recent. And it's, you know, now we're 24 years into the 2000s. So yeah. All right, looks like we have some time for some questions.
Question.
I got something to say.
I want the truth.
I am listening.
All right, first question. What's a passing joke from a movie that you wish could be developed as a feature-length movie? I know the Dracula musical from Forgetting Sarah Marshall helped Self Thingy get into the Muppets project, but I really want to see a Dracula rock opera with puppets. Anyway, what do you think, Aaron?
That would be fun. I went with the I'll preface this by saying, for the longest time, when somebody would say, what's a movie that doesn't have a sequel that deserves a sequel, my answer would be Inside Out. And now that has happened this year. And so this is my new Inside Out answer. I think the Inside Out passing joke where the camera goes into the pet brains would make a hilarious movie. It would be interesting for me to see that expanded, that world, an idea expanded of what goes on inside the minds of our pets as they decide to do what they do.
Be so. Like the Look Who's Talking Now of the Disney filmography. But I would love to see that too, because that'd be fun. Can we make sense of what animals are thinking in any one given time? I would love to see that as well.
Yep.
Have you ever seen the movie Bowfinger?
I have.
There's a part where there's a section of that movie where Steve Martin hires a crew of Mexican immigrants to film Eddie Murphy, and they start off as novices, but by the end of it, they're absolute experts. They know the technical jargon and everything. And that little movie that's happening and behind the scenes in Bowfinger is something that I would love to see. Would love to see a crew of Mexican immigrants suddenly just like learning how to make movies and learning the joy of film and all of this other type of stuff. That is something that I would love to see.
Yeah, that'd be fun.
Let's see, over in the chat we have yes, we have the joke at the end of 22 Jump Street when they make all those sequels, the 23, 24, 25 and so on Jump Streets, where I think there's like every single possible genre is explored, where they go into space and all that other stuff too.
Mm-hmm.
Flyboy says Fox Force 5 needed to be picked up by a network. That's the series from Pulp Fiction that Uma Thurman is in. Shaggy says, I want to see some of the movies from Tropic Thunder. Yes, absolutely. Those, and in fact, those trailers at the beginning of Tropic Thunder was supposed to be a web series that Ben Stiller was going to do at one point, and then I guess it just fell through. I guess they just, for whatever reason, those things fall through on. But that would have been awesome to have seen. Josh says the traumatic stories Phoebe Cates says in both Gremlins movies. Yes, absolutely. Those would be fun. Shaggy also says the fake movie from Postcards from the Edge. Yes, that would be a good one as well.
I was also thinking the only example I can think of this happening is the Tarantino thing, right? Where there was a trailer for wasn't the movie Rodriguez made? I can't remember exactly. I'm not a huge Tarantino.
He did Death Proof. He did, what is this movie? Oh, Grindhouse.
Grindhouse. Wasn't Grindhouse a trailer?
Yeah, so Grindhouse was not a trailer. Grindhouse itself had three trailers in it. One was by Edgar Wright. One was by Rob Zombie.
One was
by Eli Roth. Eli Roth has gone on to do Thanksgiving. Rodriguez did do a trailer for that, which was the one with Danny Trejo.
Mm-hmm.
Machete. He did Machete.
Machete, that's the one. Yeah.
Yeah, so he did Machete. Eli Roth has done Thanksgiving. Rob Zombie has not done the zombie women of the SS. And then there was Edgar Wright's Don't, which was, I would love to see that movie. But we've only gotten two of those to actually be made into movies.
That's wild.
But the fact that we got any at all is pretty amazing, I think, because I don't think they ever meant for them to do that.
No, I don't think so.
Yeah. So let's see. Yeah. And other people reminded me that was Planet Terror that Robert Rodriguez did was the other movie. Believe me, when I'm alone in my living room, I can come up with every single thing possible. But when I'm on this thing right here, microphones and stuff like
short
that.
Short circuits the brain.
Brain. The brain, man. That's why Will Levis throws a ball behind him in a game.
That's right.
We got time for one more, I believe. Let's see. What's a TV show or movie or character theme that just gets stuck in your head? Because of Scrubs, I've had Ted's a cappella group doing the underdog theme on loop. It's great, by the way.
There are lots of answers to this. I've been humming the Inside Out theme for weeks now. It's so good. Giacchino's score is so good in that movie. But I think my favorite answer as far as like a TV show theme song is Malcolm in the Middle, the They Might Be Giants. Song Boss of Me, that just lodges in and it's running over in my brain every time I hear it. They Might Be Giants have done a lot of TV theme songs and interesting kind of catchy stuff like that, but that's one that always sticks with me.
Succession's title theme always got me playing a fake piano all the way through it because it's that good. I'm sitting there pretending like I know exactly what notes they're hitting in that, and I'm sitting there do 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 do, and I never skip intros anyway. I always listen. I always watch the opening of any show. I always, doesn't matter what it is. Succession's opening theme is one of the biggest bangers there is in all of television, and I don't think it gets nearly enough play.
Is that Bertel? Also, Nicholas Bertel, is that who did that?
I think that's right. Yeah, actually,
so good.
Yeah, and then House's opening theme song with Massive Attack's Teardrop was also a great one. And as far as movies are concerned, I just recently mentioned this. The Gattaca theme music that plays throughout that has been in my head for a really long time. It's just one of those type of themes that just stayed there forever. And I'm not saying it's the best ever, but it's certainly something that just tapped into my head for a really long time. So I'm big into that. Let's see, over on the chat we have, Nolan says, I just discovered the Scooby-Doo Where Are You on Mac, so that's been stuck in my head recently. Yeah. Slab says, I had Greatest American Hero stuck in my head during my shower for some reason today. Had a dream about WKRP theme last night. I'm weird. Man, the Greatest American Hero song is impossible to get out of your head once you've heard it. It's so good. Nick says the Westworld theme and Kimmy Schmidt both equally good. Kimmy Schmidt, man, that one's a fantastic one. It's so good. Actually, I haven't seen Westworld in forever, so I can't remember what that theme was at this point.
I don't either.
Tatsu says, does the opening for Firefly count? I love it. I imagine it does. I don't know why it wouldn't. And then let's see. Also, Nolan says Game of Thrones opening theme used to be the most hype. Yeah, it was. That's another one that you just sit there and kind of hum along to as it plays. Shaggy says, no, you can't talk about an opening theme you can't skip over. It's just like,
it's so good.
Shaggy says X-Men cartoon theme is a banger. Castro says the Gravity Falls theme, especially the rock version from the finale. Yeah, absolutely. Nolan says also watched the Untouchable movies recently. Oh my God. Yeah, you're talking about Ennio Morricone there. That's the Untouchables is a fucking fantastic score. Nick says, I have had How to Train Your Dragon's first flight in my head since June when we showed my son for the first time.
It's a great score.
Yes, it is. Josh says, the $6 million man running near. Yes. Kasher says, also the Avengers theme. Yes, absolutely.
Sure.
And so, yeah, absolutely. All of those are fantastic.
Good stuff.
All right. Well, I guess we have time for one more. One more. What is your favorite, most historically inaccurate movie? And this person brings up The Greatest Showman, which I still haven't seen.
Oh, I haven't seen The Greatest Showman.
I have not.
I mean, it's a great answer to the question. Frustratingly historically inaccurate, The Greatest Showman. I did a little bit of research on this because nothing came to mind immediately and was looking through, like, list that people have made of the most historically inaccurate, you know, movies. And one that popped in there that I really, really like was The Imitation Game. I really, really enjoy that movie. But if you do some research into the actual Turing and what happened during that time, the movie takes a lot of liberties. And, you know, even just from the simple, these people wouldn't have been in this room kind of stuff. You know what I mean? Like, to be in the decision-making rooms as opposed to the math rooms or, you know, whatever. So I really dig The Imitation Game, but apparently not really how it happened much at all.
I did not realize that. I didn't realize everything that happened in the movie happened in real life, but I didn't realize it was that inaccurate, actually. Mine is Catch Me If You Can. That movie is fantastic and yet a complete lie, obviously. They basically pulled the same trick as DiCaprio does in the movie by pretending like all of this happened as it did and everything, and they're lying about the lie in Catch Me If You Can. Going over to the chat, Slab says Braveheart. Yeah, Braveheart's a really good one that I don't think is in any way accurate whatsoever, in fact. It's like almost 100% inaccurate, that is from what I can understand about Braveheart.
Yeah.
Josh says Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter. That's a good one. What's funny to me is there was a guy at Hollywood 27 who was working customer service, and he got somebody who came up to him and was like, is this historically accurate? And the guy behind the counter is like, the movie's called Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter. But is there anything historical about it? The movie is called Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter. let's see. Flyboy says Memphis Belle. They got the name of the plane and the date of the last mission right. Otherwise, complete fiction. I have never seen Memphis Belle. I remember that came out. I think it was like 91 is when that movie came out. I have never seen that movie.
I don't know if I have either.
I remember getting some regard, but I don't think it was like a huge, you know, thing. Let's see. And more talking about, Lincoln, and then, Tatsu says Inglourious Bastards. That's a great one. That's a great one. That's one of those like sort of like wish fulfillment kind of history. And it's a great movie. All right. Well, that's going to do it for this week. Once again, chat, thank you for coming out and watching us and giving us answers and stuff like that. Love you guys for coming out and experiencing this week by week. Next week, Moon. Can't wait to revisit that, and that will be a lot of fun. But that's going to do it for today. We'll see you next time.
See you guys. See
ya. Bye. Part of the live show by being a member of the Sin Club at Patreon at patreon.com/cinemasins. Chat with us on the CinemaSins Discord at discord.gg/cinemasins or CinemaSins Twitter at CinemaSins, and email any comments or questions to recotopia@cinemasins.com. That's recotopia@cinemasins.com. I saw there was this YouTube video that kept getting recommended to me. that was talking about this is the most disturbing movie that's on Netflix, and it was called Creep, and it's got Mark Duplass in it, and he did it. I can't remember who directed it, but it's, you know, it's of course like one of those. It's I don't know if you would consider this mumblecore. It's just found footage. Patrick Bryce directed it, and both he and Mark Duplass wrote it and starred in it. And it's just about a dude who gets answers an ad on like Craigslist or something like that to do video work at this guy's house. And then so he goes, and of course everything is being shot no matter what. His trip there is getting shot. He goes to gets to the house, and this guy is sort of like immediately off, but Mark Duplass finally is like, okay, this is why you're here. I'm dying of cancer, and I want to shoot my life just before I die, so that my kid, who's about to be born, will know who I was, you know, so he can watch this video. And so like everything from this point forward is Mark Duplass doing things that are a little bit off, just a little bit off. Looking like, okay, I'll deal with this as the videographer here, because it's not totally like I need to run away from this off yet. And then it keeps getting worse and worse. And I've seen a lot of movies like this recently, like not like this, but like has this idea like Speak No Evil, where people are just kind of being polite to stay around a situation they shouldn't be around and everything. But yeah, it's a very interesting found footage movie. I haven't seen anything quite like it, but Mark Duplass is pretty scary in it.
I really dig Duplass. I like not only like the stuff he's in and his kind of style as an actor, but I just he seems to have a really interesting grip on what it is to make movies, you know, like independently, you know, do stuff. It seems like anytime he's coming out with something, I'm like, oh, that's a movie I'm glad somebody made, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, I really dig that vibe.
Yeah, there's something to be said, right, for a lot of these movies that don't have right like real theatrical aspirations or to make lots of money. They're just there kind of like, I want to do this. I want to use this as an outlet, creative outlet. Whoever gets to watch this and enjoys it, that's great. It's like, if I just reach one person, it'll be worth it type of movies.
This was one of those weekends where, like, first of all, there was a lot of crazy, frustrating technical support stuff with my wife is taking classes. She's getting her master's in nursing and doing some home courses, those kind of stuff. And so for these tests, I don't know if you've ever done an online class, but they have proctors who have to watch you take the test in your home, right? You have to do all this stuff with, like, going through a certain browser and, having a separate webcam. It can't be the webcam that's built into your machine, because they have to be able to tell you, like, point it here so I can tell no one's giving you answers or, you know, whatever kind of thing. And it was a two-day process, because you do, like, a practice, they call it practice assessment, just to make sure, like, when it comes test time that you're ready to go kind of thing. And every time there was something technological that was going. So it was a really frustrating weekend of just like putting out technological fires, trying to figure out how to get this done first. So I didn't watch as many movies this weekend as I usually do. And the two I got around to watching, I just didn't feel like I could recommend on the show.
Yep.
One was from earlier this year. Did you see Night Swim?
I heard a lot about it, though.
It's terrible. Like, it is a terrible movie. I'm not going to recommend that one. And then the other I watched was, I think a Netflix. I know it was a streamer, called Damsel. And I was right on the line of, I could figure out a way to recommend this, but it feels like it's right on that line of, like, you know, you're recommending something that's not all that great. But that's the one with Millie Bobby Brown, who plays, it starts off as like almost like a castle princess, you know, romance, getting married off, and then takes a hard turn into dragon fighting and dragon survival. And it's actually, it's an interesting idea. I really love the idea of this movie, and I think Millie Bobby Brown's great in it. It's just the movie isn't technically doing the things to keep me interested. Like it's very much kind of one note kind of stuff. It was an interesting movie, but not a good movie, if that makes sense.
I have run into it many times watching stuff that about 30 minutes in, I realize this cannot be a recommend. And even if it's like something that's classic or got a good rating or something like that, I'll watch stuff. I was watching, I'm not going to reveal this movie just yet because it could still be a good recommend.
Sure.
About 2 weeks ago, I was watching this movie and I was like, okay, I kind of like this. This is okay. And it's got like 30 minutes left. I have not watched the remaining 30 minutes in these last 2 weeks. And I'm like, every time, you know, I go to my Amazon Fire Stick, that movie shows up like, finish this already. and I'm like, I don't know if I want to yet. And maybe if I may need to restart it and watch it, because this was also a movie that I was watching, and then like about 30 minutes in, distractions started coming into play. And so I was like, well, maybe I'm not giving this movie a fair shake. So may have to restart it at some point. But that was one that I was sitting there going, I just spent all this time watching this movie, but I can't recommend it. And so I went on to something else. And then sometimes you're like, oh yeah, this, that's why a lot of times I just go to just guaranteed movies. But even some of the guaranteed ones are just, I was like, this is a classic? You're calling this a classic Criterion? I don't see it yet. maybe I'll see it at some point. I'll see the goodness in this, but yeah. I can't believably say this movie's good. It's happened a bunch. I remember during the Syncast days watching a movie before the Syncast, just hoping it was good and to recommend it. And I think it was one of those, it was one like you're just describing where it was like, it's just good enough to, if you like this kind of thing.
Yeah, I can figure out how to say it. Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, you like to give like hearty recommends, but yeah.
I hate to tell you listeners out there that sometimes this happens.